today's guest, if you read the Blockmates 2024 thesis, you might have seen a section on these guys. If you're paying attention to what's happening in the Solana ecosystem, and we've spoke to many people on this podcast, particularly around payments and how they're the killer app, and this one really stands out to me personally, and I think by the end of the episode, it's going to pique everyone's interest who's listening. But we've dragged Simon on from Sling. So, Simon, how are you doing?
Hey, not bad, thanks, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, really good, really good. Just chatting off air. We might be hosting an event close to where these guys are based in London, if anyone's in the Blockmates community that wants to come to that. Apparently, I have to buy everyone a drink, but I don't know how that one's going to go. If the markets hold up, then we're all right. But it's only coming for me at London price of beers, if not.
Yeah, I think it's like £7 a beer nowadays. So.
How have you kind of found your place into where you are now? Is there like a strong fintech background? Is there a strong crypto background? Just kind of fill us in, set the scene on there, and then we can, as I said, dive into the conversation.
Yeah, sounds good. So I'm a designer by trade, a product designer. So I spent the last 10 years or so working on different web and mobile apps. And I guess the most relevant and I guess the most pivotal point in my career was I worked at a neobank called Monzo. It's pretty big in the UK. It's not very big outside of the UK. I think they're in America and they've got some users in America now, but I guess I don't know where your listener base is, but I'll explain what Monzo is. It's what's referred to as a neobank, or like one of these startup banks or fintech banks. And what they did is they took the sort of existing banking system and they modernized it, and they used newer technologies, and they did it with a huge focus on user experience and transparency. And it's done really, really well. I think as they started out, there was a lot of like negative press and stuff about them, like, oh, this new player in the game, using all this new stuff, it's scary and it's just on your phone.
I wonder why there's a lot of pushback by the big incumbents.
I know, surprise. They sort of powered through, and they're now, I think, in the top 10 biggest banks in the UK, and they consistently win awards about being the best bank. And it was just based around the idea that there's this system which theoretically can work really, really well for people, like the financial system, the savings and lending and budgeting and all this stuff can be really, really beneficial. And really, really change people's lives if done correctly. And just the existing bank weren't doing it in that way. There were hidden fees sort of negative user experience practices in order to get you to go into your overdraft and pay huge overdraft fees and stuff like this. And so working there, I learned a lot about sort of like how you take these historically complex and opaque financial practices and how to bring them to users in an open and transparent and usable way. About halfway through maybe my Monzo journey, I sort of, a bunch of my friends were into crypto. And so I started exploring the space and learning and stuff from them as I was going. And every time I tried to do anything in crypto, it just went horribly wrong. I'd send, you know, something to the wrong chain and it would disappear, or I couldn't even figure out how to log in because you need to connect your MetaMask to, you know, 8 different things, and then suddenly sometimes it shows up and sometimes it doesn't show up and all this stuff. But my friends who sort of like deeply understood it were really, really benefiting from it. And I'm not just talking about sort of like trading specifically, although obviously historically it's been trading heavy. There's like, you know, the classic, they were able to send money to each other for basically free, no matter where they were in the world. And the thing where it really hit me, I guess, was one of my friends started doing liquid staking, and the idea that you could, you know, earn interest or earn APY on your coins, and then you get this like wrapped version of this thing back that you could trade and use, but you still had your savings. And then, you know, that like flexibility was just like, that's such a beneficial thing for you as an individual. But when I try and do it, I can't figure it out. I can't work out how to do that thing. And, you know, half of them are scams and they don't work anyway. But the core underlying technology to me really stood out. And I guess when you see something which has the potential to truly benefit everybody, but isn't being maybe utilized to its fullest extent, it's a huge opportunity there. And in a similar way, I guess that Monzo saw this like, well, it's this financial system and it could be really beneficial for people and we could design it for human beings and maybe human beings will appreciate, you know, being designed for specifically and maybe use that product more than they would one that isn't designed for them. We saw that in crypto. That's, I guess, the origin story or how I became interested in this space.
Yeah, I've got a funny Monzo backstory as well. So that was like around the time that initially when I first stumbled across it, we were still at university and you've seen these bright orange cards that everyone was paying with, and then it was like, what the hell is this? And then everyone wanted to give you their ref link, because I don't know if it still does. At the time it's like you get £10 back for every kind of person you refer or something, and any way you can get £10 while you're at university is like a big deal, you know. And there's an even funnier side story. So that was around the time that I first started investing in crypto, and I think I even picked up some of the Monzo crowd sale as well. God knows how to access that now.
I think it's CrowdCube.
Yeah, CrowdCube. That was exactly what it was. So I don't know how I'll be able to access. So write those shares off. Anyone's listening, consider that a burn on my behalf. But it felt like it really kind of resonated with everyone who was in my circle and everyone's kind of that age group around that. And then even when I was kind of showing like my parents and stuff, they're like, oh, this UI, this UX just makes sense. Or if I was to go to like who I was banking with at the time, like NatWest, he was stuck in the dark ages, but like everything else had moved along, whereas kind of financial system was still stuck on, as I said, those like kind of incumbent rails, like kind of incumbent system that, as I say, that opacity that comes along with that and didn't necessarily make you want to use their services or their apps. But Monzo completely changed the game, in my opinion. My personal accounts are still on there, like my business Blockmates business accounts are on there, and I think you know, that was such a good kind of revolution in the banking industry. I think that's kind of what drew me to you guys as well, seeing like there's a few people from the back of the team that were previously working on that. I was like, well, these have got really, really great like founder market fit to make something like this work. But without kind of going on about the kind of legacy banking system for too long, can you fill people in what you guys are building with Sling?
Yeah, absolutely. So our whole goal is to make sending money as easy as it possibly can be. And it doesn't matter who you are, where you are, what bank account you have, what country you're in, what currency you work in. It should be just as easy for me to send you money to where you are as it is to my partner in the next room, as it is to someone in Peru. And the cost really shouldn't be that high. It shouldn't be that variable. There shouldn't be any sort of surprise fees or nothing hidden in the exchange rate. And that's what we're trying to achieve. I feel like the world over the last 10 years, maybe more, has just advanced in so many ways. So we used to have text messages. They used to cost 20 pence. And then if you accidentally sent a text message to someone who was out of the country at the time, it used to cost you £1. And you're like, damn it. And then someone invented WhatsApp. And you were like, why did text, like this is just how it should work. Like, it should be free. It should be instant. I shouldn't have to think about where you are. I just tap on the photo of your face and send you a text. Same with email, same with phone calls, same with pretty much all areas of technology. Everything just got faster and cheaper. And the financial system just didn't really, I think, evolve or progress at the same speed that everything else did. Like, we're still using SWIFT for international payments, which is I think it was created in the 70s. And there's some advancements going on with SEPA and faster payments and stuff, but it's still very much legacy technology, I think. And because it's legacy technology, I think it's legacy user experience as well, which is if I want to send someone in America, I have to ask them for a long string of sort of alphanumeric code, which is however long it might be within that country. And then I have to figure out the, you know, what is a good exchange rate. And then I go through this like very much banking style UI to get you the money. And then it takes 3 days in order to get to you. And those 3 days, I don't really know where that money is. And it's a little bit scary, especially if I'm sending a significant chunk of money. And then it eventually arrives in your account and I'm charged 10, 20, 30 pounds for the absolute pleasure of whatever that experience was. And it just doesn't really seem like that should be the case anymore. And we think with the new technology that is blockchain, that is crypto, we can create experience which is akin to sending a text message, which is as easy as any type of communication is today. That's what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to do, Slim.
So where has the kind of origin story of Sling kind of came from? Was this, I know you kind of touched upon the problems that you guys are solving or seeking to solve, but was there any kind of bang to the head and someone's thought, right, crypto rails now makes sense to go and do this? And obviously, as I previously mentioned, there's a couple of guys from Monzo there, so there seems to be a lot of good, you know, crossover, but I don't know if there's any kind of interesting anecdotes from how the story of Sling was born.
Yeah, so I think there's kind of like multiple story streams that get us to the point that we are today. One of them was the one I sort of spoke about earlier, where I saw a bunch of real strong crypto utility that's not being utilized in its fullest form, I guess. My co-founder Mike tells a story where he was a part of a DAO that was trying to buy land in Montana with some of his friends, and he sent over some amount of USDC in order to buy this land. And the experience was like 50% good, 50% bad. Like 50% bad, which is he had to like buy it on Coinbase and then send it to this string, which is, you know, you type it very slightly wrong or copy it and paste it incorrectly or whatever. And it's sort of very scary in some ways. But in other ways, it was like truly amazing. Like it was incredibly cheap and it arrived in the other person's bank account instantaneously. And so again, he had this like similar epiphany moment, I think, where he was like, this thing has the potential to be really, really good. So me and Mike worked together at Monzo. And a couple of years ago, he was exploring the idea of on-chain identity. I think this was pretty big at the time, or there was a lot of stuff emerging. And there's these little chips in your passports now, or in a lot of passports. And with the NFC reader on your phone, you can actually hold it up to your passport and it can drag the information across onto your phone. And you get this like cryptographically verified on like digital version of your passport that you can then potentially use online. This combined with all the interesting advancements going on in blockchain, he started exploring this idea and he reached out to me and was like, cool, I've got this idea. Do you want to come on and explore this with me from a design perspective? Like, let's see how this could work out. So we explored that for a couple of months, did a bunch of design and product thinking on that, and ultimately ended up with this chicken and egg problem, which is, if you create online identity or digital identity or on-chain identity, in order to get people to sign up and use it, it needs to have some form of utility. Like just having my identity on-chain doesn't really give me much. Like it's a cool technical thing, but I don't gain much from it. But in order to have utility, you kind of need users. Like you need to go to various businesses or establishments or whatever it might be, and you say, accept my product, my platform. Exactly. And therefore you get stuck in this circle of like, well, I need users and I need product and I need user product, so on and so forth. So we started thinking like, cool, well, this is a really interesting space and a really exciting opportunity to explore, but we think it's just going to be incredibly hard to get going. So what can we do in the space that will allow us to, you know, get a decent user base that we can then maybe provide this on-chain identity stuff to? And that's when we settled on the payment stuff. Like, it's a natural use case for crypto. It's often like the killer crypto app is payments, and all this stuff gets banded around. Also, like, we were like, we have the skill set in order to do this, to build this product. I think like we both worked in large scale social products or large scale international applications. Mike worked at Facebook, I worked at Spotify and did some work at Google. We both worked in finance, we both worked at Monzo. And we're like, oh, cool, we probably have the skill set to build this financial product. Should we give this a go? Should we explore what we think that might look like? So we went away and we explored what the application could look like. We explored how the compliance might look and how the partnerships might look for us. And is the technology there to allow us to do this? And the answer was yes. It was quite funny, actually. As we were coming across problems, they sort of were being solved in front of us by other people. So we're like, oh, we need to be able to, you know, send money to this thing in order to get it to users in America. And so we'd call up some people and they'd say like, we literally finished building this last week. And it was kind of wild that we were exploring this space as the space was opening up in front of us. And we sort of looked at each other and we were like, should we do this? Should we give this a go? Like, it's kind of wild, I guess, to try and think that you can maybe like change the global financial payment system. And it's like, this isn't going to be easy. But it just felt like the right time. We felt like the right people to try and give it a go. So we're like, cool, let's try. 2 years later, here we are still trying.
Awesome. That's a really, really cool backstory. And as I say, it's nice to see like strong professional founders actually building this space, because some of the stuff that comes across our desk can often be at times it's first time founders trying to change the world, and there's nothing wrong with that at times, which is like, yeah, I don't think you sometimes realize the hurdles that you're going to be facing in this space. So people might be able to get a clearer picture of what you guys are building now, but what would like a typical user journey be like on the app? Let's say like I'm sending you $10, £10, whatever it may be.
Our goal is to make this as simple as possible. And it's interesting that you chose £10, I guess, because historically you would never send £10 internationally. It wouldn't be worth it. It's not worth the hassle. We go for drinks. We go to this meetup that you're planning. You buy a couple of rounds, and annoyingly that comes to £10 because it's London prices. And then you head back home, and then I want to pay you back for those beers, but because you've got a bank account that's not in the UK, we'd probably just say don't worry about it. Like, it's not worth the time and effort for me to figure out how to pay you that £10 back. We want to create an experience that is cheap enough and that is easy enough that it is worth me paying you back that £10. In fact, it might even be delightful, I guess, in some ways for me to send you that £10 back, because it can be an enhancement to the time and that we spent together. So the experience as it looks like on Sling today is we have a global search directory. So if you're on Sling, I should be able to type in your name or another unique identifier. If you opt into being found, obviously, we've got some privacy settings there that if you want to stay hidden, you can. But if you opt into being found, or if you're in my contacts, I can search for your name. I tap on it. I type in the amount I want to send you. You can add a note and a photo on Sling. So maybe we take some drunken photos at the bar. I'll attach it and say, thank you very much. It was great to meet you, or whatever it might be. And then I hit send. And that's it. That's the flow. It should be that simple. It should be that easy. And if I have money on my Sling wallet, it's free.
And what's going on under the hood there? And like, where's the magic coming from? And I suppose this is where people, like, definitely in our audience, it's going to prick their ears up, I think.
Yeah. So the magic on the wallet-to-wallet transfer. So there's two sets of magic, I guess, that happen within Sling. you've got the ramps that we can go into in a little bit, and then you've got the sending. And as we're talking about the sending, I'll go into that first. The magic here isn't really that magic at all, I guess, in some ways. It's understanding that in order to get this product, a product that has crypto rails, out to billions of people, people are going to want a experience that they're used to, an experience that feels familiar, and an experience that, you know, doesn't give me too many choices. I don't want to decide what chain I want to send this on. I don't want to decide which coin I want to send, so on and so forth. I just know that I owe you £10, and that's all I need to know. So we do a lot of work at Sling to try and hide any level of financial complexity, even from the fiat side, which is like, I want to send you £10 because I owe you £10, but actually you don't want £10, you want €15. But like, I don't need to do the conversion there. I just know that I owe you £10, so I send you £10, and then you can take it out in euros if you want. Like, even down to that stuff, which is still quite complex in products, in fiat products today, we just take that away. So it's a lot of research, and I guess it's a lot of deeply understanding the problem in order to surface it to the user in an incredibly simple way. And it's a lot of work to make something very, very simple. So like, we're abstracting away public keys, we're abstracting away the underlying cryptocurrency, we're abstracting away all the stages that you go through on a Solana transaction from initialized to sort of like confirmed. And we're just saying that people don't care about that stuff. Some people do, but like on a day-to-day basis, like I don't really care about the underlying technology. In the same way that I don't really care what my bank runs on. I don't care if they're using Go. I don't care if it's Faster Payments or SEPA. In reality, I just want you to get the money. So we design all our flows to be solely about the singular thing that a user's trying to do, which is get one person a amount of money that they are owed, I guess.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I put in my notes, and I think we briefly scanned upon it there. So how's the on and off ramp system work? So because let's say, can you send requests for money?
So it's like, you can't, but it's on the roadmap.
Right. Okay. So let's say you've got that one stingy friend who always says he'll pay you back for the taxi, and you've had enough, and it's just like, right, I'm going to send him a request for £5 or whatever. If he was to go through Sling and he was to try and send the money, but he has none in the account, how does the on-ramp process work? How does the off-ramp process work? Is it a bit of a logistical nightmare when you're designing this thing with on-ramps globally? Like, because I can imagine that's a bit of a headache.
Yeah. So one of our values as a company, I guess, and one of the things that we strive for every single day when designing, when building, is we do a lot of hard work so that you as the user don't have to do any hard work. So if your friend wants to pay you back £5, all they do is they go into the Sling app, they hit add money, they hit £5, they select where they want that £5 to come from, whether it be Apple Pay or a bank account or a card, they hit add money and it arrives in their account. So from a user perspective, it's incredibly simple. You don't have to think about anything other than, I need to add £5. Behind the scenes, there's obviously a significant amount of complexity there across the board, from a technical perspective, from a compliance perspective, from anti-money laundering, AML checks and risks. There's so much going on behind the scenes to make that thing incredibly easy and incredibly simple. And I think where a lot of products, or where a lot of crypto products fall down, I guess, nowadays, is the ramps are hard to use. They can create amazing user experiences, and there's a lot of apps at the moment that are doing really, really well, wallet-to-wallet transfers, and I think people are doing amazing jobs in the space. But the ramps are the hardest part. Quite often you'll get sent away to like a MoonPay website, or some other website, which you don't control the user experience, and you might even have to KYC again, even if you may have already KYC'd, or maybe you didn't KYC in the first place, so you have to KYC this time. And it's at the point where I'm trying to add money, so it's a blocker there. So we spend a lot of time and effort building these ramps so that anybody can sign up for Sling and anybody can add whatever whatever currency they want to without even considering it, I guess, as easy as, or even easier than adding money to your bank account.
Yeah, what was, you'll know this better than me, but what was the kind of tech that allowed, say you were, is it called open banking? Like where you'd be on a specific app and then it would allow you to actually pay for stuff. Like say everyone's, is this just like a next evolution of that? Or is like, is there any connotations to that? Like, I hope people actually know what I'm talking about there.
Yeah. So I guess to give you a bit, to give people a bit of background here, open banking is something that is quite prolific in the UK. It's now spreading throughout Europe. And I think it's maybe a little bit in America. I'm not sure. It was a government mandated scheme that required banks to basically open up APIs to all other banks. Banks historically were quite closed off. Banks didn't want to create an open system because they made money by you keeping money on in their accounts. And the government came up with this thing called open banking, which is like, for all intents and purposes, like open up your APIs so that money can easily flow between bank accounts. So actually, interestingly enough, we're shipping something. Hopefully it'll be live by the time this comes out, but we're actually shipping some open banking stuff in Sling that allow you to connect a bank account using that system in UK and Europe, and to add money via that. So that is one system that allows us to do this very, very smoothly. We work with a partner that means we don't have to build anything out there. We obviously have to integrate with them, but we don't have to build anything of our own. And stuff like that is really, really beneficial, I guess, for Sling.
Awesome.
And for users.
Yeah, absolutely. So with people will be understanding the kind of peer-to-peer nature of this, but, and just stop me here if I'm pressing too much, is there plans for like expansion beyond that? As we were saying previously about your previous foray into kind of maybe on-chain identity, you need the kind of vendors. What does that look like? I don't know, however far down the roadmap. Do you foresee that happening as a kind of peer to business B2C kind of product, or is it focused on peer to peer?
The one thing we do not have is a lack of potential ideas. There is infinite stuff that we could do, and in the fullness of time, maybe we will do some of it, all of it, none of it. It's hard to say what the future holds, but obviously it doesn't take a genius to be like, cool, you've got this financial product. There is infinite avenues you could explore. I think where a lot of products struggle early days is a lack of focus and getting pulled in too many different directions because there's so many exciting things to try and do. And you end up doing none of them particularly well. What I think we're trying to do at Sling, at least in the early days, is we're trying to do one thing very, very well, which is send money from one person to another person. And there's a lot to do between now and us fulfilling our dream, which is send to anybody in any country instantaneously for an incredibly cheap price. There's a lot between where we are now and where we want to be. So in the I guess the short term or the medium term or the foreseeable future, that's where we'll try and excel. And it's easy to see all this new technology. It's easy, like especially with crypto, when new things are being invented every single day, almost, it's easy to see this stuff and think like, oh, we should go and do that. Oh, we should go and do that. And our challenge as a company is to say no to two incredible ideas. Like it's easy to say no to bad ideas. It's really, really hard to say no to really, really good ideas. But hopefully we'll do a good job of saying no to some really, really good ideas, and we can build out this global P2P product. And then once we've done that, if we ever get to the stage where you're happy with that, which I don't know if that's technically possible, then there are a range of areas we would love to explore. And there's a range of things we'd love to explore right now. But one thing we're trying to do is we're trying to keep the team really, really small, really, really lean. And what that allows us to do is pass those savings on to customers. You see all these existing payment systems, and some of them even give you like a breakdown of the cost. Like when you send money, they'll give you like a little pie chart of here's what your fees are going to. And if you look at it, it's quite often like this much of actual like payment fees, like this is our Swift fee or whatever it might be. And then it's like this much is for research and development, and this much is for like office costs, and this much is for keeping the company going. And you're paying sort of like £5 or whatever it might be, depending on how much you're trying to send, just to keep the team alive. Mm-hmm. If we keep our team small, and this is one of the amazing things about using Solana, about using the blockchain, is, you know, we have that ledger there. Like we can build upon that. A lot of the work's already done for us. It allows us to keep the team very small, very light. If we keep the team small and light, then we don't have to pay as much, you know, for offices or for salaries and stuff. And therefore, like our overheads are lower, and therefore our fees can be lower. And we only need to charge a little bit in order to, you know, keep the company running. And ultimately that leads to a better experience for users.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always get met with this idea. So we've got a second podcast production called Still Early, and that we've interviewed quite a few like Web3 gaming companies recently. And I think that's from where it was to where it is now is night and day. Like, and what's interesting about what they're doing is the first iteration was, this is crypto, but it's a game. Now it's, this is a game and it's run on crypto rails, and you don't even know it's run on crypto rails. So like all the in-game items and proof of ownership, proof of transferability and all that kind of good stuff. But the way they've kind of positioned it is you don't necessarily have to understand what's going on in the background. You will not have a clue that it's happening. And I think this is a real conscious decision, because I think they're well aware that an already extremely strong, established crypto regular gaming community might be somewhat deterred by someone saying this is a crypto related game or this is a Web3 related game. And you think you'll know better than anyone, like the connotations that it can get from the people who are uninitiated in the space, it can kind of go either way depending on if they know it or not. So is there a strong focus on using the app as a Trojan horse, like completely just burying the tech in the background, and once people are like, oh my god, this is amazing, and it's like, oh well, actually this is how it works?
Yeah, I think Trojan horse is the wrong way to look at it, because we don't want to trick users into anything. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be like, surprise, you now own crypto, got you. But we also understand that like the majority of people don't care about the underlying technology. Like we work in the crypto space, we work in the technical space, we work in fintechs and so on and so forth. So we have this like deep underlying love of the technology. We had this actually everywhere I've worked, where like you're so ingrained in the problem and in the space that you sort of forget that other people don't care about the same things that you care about. One thing at Monzo that we found is like people don't care about finance as much as the people who work at Monzo do. So when you say like, how do you budget, and like what's your plan here and here and here, they're like, I don't have one, it's just money, and like it allows me to buy things, and sometimes I have some of it and sometimes I don't. Like most people don't live in the same world that we do, and therefore don't actually care about things as much and deeply as we do. So like the majority of the world don't care about crypto. They're just trying to achieve a thing. And this is like, I guess, yeah, like quite obvious in the gaming space, which is like, I can download Fortnite and buy a skin that I can show off to the world. And I don't care what technology runs that game. I don't care what defines that I own that skin, or I don't, or in sort of in CSGO or whatever it is, I don't care about the underlying technology that allows me to open this loot crate and then get out this snazzy looking knife and sell that for thousands of pounds. Like I don't care what's happening underneath the hood there. I care about the fact that I can do these things. And I think that's the majority of the world. Like they care about the output, not what goes into it. So that's our focus as a company. That's what the story is. The story is we allow you to send money to anybody, anywhere, instantaneously, for very, very cheap and very, very easy. And then if you want to explore it a little bit more, you want to dive a little bit deeper into it, we can say, cool, this is how it works. We're using the blockchain. We're using this currency called USDC. If you want to dig even deeper into it, we'll happily explain to you, like, you know, how all the underlying networks connect and so on and so forth. But most people, they just want to send money to someone as quickly and easily as possible. So it's less about tricking people, I guess, into using crypto, and more about telling people the value of the product before you tell people about how the product works. If I want to sell you, I don't know, what's a good example here? But I mean, maybe computers is a good one, which is like the people who really, really like computers dig really deeply into how much RAM it has and how much, how fast it can, and how much memory it has and so on and so forth. But the majority of people are like, can it run the thing I want it to run? Like, will this laptop break down if I open too many Excel spreadsheets or try and play a game on it? They don't actually care about the individual details. Yeah, so I guess it's akin to that. And I think if we do our job well and we show the world that crypto isn't necessarily scary, it actually has a significant amount of utility, and it can actually allow these things that you're trying to do to do them better, I think the whole world will then start converging onto this. You see this pattern, which is like when something becomes possible and it's substantially better than the existing system, everything just eventually works that way. You've got like Amazon One Click, for example. They created that one click checkout. And then when people realized that that was a thing that could happen, everybody did it. Or next day delivery. They did next day delivery, and now suddenly everyone does next day delivery because it's faster, because it's better, it's because it's what users actually want. And again, with Monzo, when people realize that this system, you know, can work this way if you put a bunch of time and effort into it, and they realize that it is actually better, everybody starts doing that thing. Now banks, the user experience of actually a lot of banks nowadays is actually very, very good. They're improving because they saw what was happening. They were like, oh no, we need to catch up. We need to do this thing better. And they either improve the existing app, or they ship new, like HSBC just shipped Zing, I think it is, which is like an international payments app, very similar to Wise in a lot of ways. So everybody sees that this thing can now exist. Users start to expect this way of working. And everyone goes, oh no, now I need to go and do that thing. So if Sling does its job well, and we do get a bunch of traction, and we do show the world that the blockchain can be used in this way, I wouldn't be surprised if eventually everyone goes, oh, okay, that's how we need to do this thing, because everyone expects instant payments now. Everyone expects the user experience that is incredibly simple and easy. Like, why do I need to ask this person for their IBAN? I don't need to do that over on that side. Why should I do it on this side? Or when I send money on Sling, you know, I can send £1,000 to the US and it costs me £2. Why is it costing me £5, £10 on these other products? So hopefully we don't need to trick people into using crypto, but if we show them the value of crypto, then, you know, they'll be like, oh, it is pretty good. And in fact, everybody should be using this underlying rail because it's way better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I was checking out on, you know, Instagram has a really good feature of just being able to show you absolutely everything you don't need, but you want to buy anyway. So like, yeah. But the Apple Pay checkout feature on that, if I'm buying something online, it doesn't have that. I'm like, oh, do I really have to put my details in? How lazy does that sound? But that's just inherently, it's just consumer behavior, isn't it? And it's, if you can make it so ingrained in your muscle memory, once you've had that great experience, everything else feels stupid. Is there a, not to give the game away too much, but is there kind of like thoughts on how you get this in the hands of people? Like, as you say, previously being at Monzo, that was like such a great blueprint and could be a case study of how you get people aware and actually using the product. Like, is there any ideas how you kind of roll that out? And obviously don't give the game away too much if you don't need to, but I'd love to pick your brain on that.
Yeah. So outside of all the classic marketing stuff that you can and we will do eventually, the thing with payments, I guess, is they're inherently viral. They're inherently social. Like it's a two-way thing. I want to pay you. You want to receive money. And therefore, there's this natural virality that I think we need to be piggybacking upon. the issue with a lot of payments products is you have what's like called the cold start problem, which is like, if I want to send you money on Sling, you need to have Sling as well. And that's a blocker because everyone's telling everybody to download apps all the time now. We do KYC on Sling because we're fully compliant. So you need to download an app. You need to, you know, put in your address, sign up with your passport and stuff. And it's, you know, it's a little bit of an effort. It's a blocker. And you'd be like, no, just use this one that I'm already using. I'm already on PayPal. Just use PayPal. And like, people will pay a lot of money for convenience. So like, PayPal's extortionately expensive. Wise has this amazing chart of like how cheap it is to send money around the world. And PayPal's always dead bottom. But because people already have it and it's relatively easy to use, people will quite happily pay extortionate amount of money to send money rather than downloading a new thing. But we think two things. One, I think the Sling product is 10 times, if not more, better than the existing products. And so it's not like it's just a little bit cheaper. It's not like it's just a little bit easier. I think it's substantially a better product. And therefore, hopefully, will remove some of the inertia of signing up to a new product. That's one thing. The second thing is we have these things called Sling Links, which allow me to send you money even if you don't have Sling. It creates a web wallet, which I can send to you via a message. You can then withdraw that to your bank account. And what that does is it shows you the value of Sling. It shows you the ease and the bargain, I guess, that is receiving and sending money over Sling without you needing to download anything. And the good thing about payments products is like, I'm sending these Sling links out all the time because it's a good way to pay people. So I'm a bad example because I work there, but like, a user becomes a marketer, as it were, because it's easy and cheap for me to send you a Sling link. You receive the Sling link because you want your money. Suddenly you're now integrated into the Sling system, or you've seen the value of Sling without needing to sign up. Maybe you receive one, maybe you receive two. You're like, damn, that was easy. That, like, I didn't have to send you my IBAN or anything like that. I just withdrew the money and it was in my bank account in seconds. It was cheap. And then you go, cool, maybe I'll sign up for this Sling thing and see what all the fuss is about. So that's one aspect, I guess, that we're hoping will work well. I worked in the growth team at Monzo for pretty much my entire time there, as well as a bunch of our team that we have over at Sling as well. So we've done a good amount of work historically on growing financial products, and we'll utilize some of the playbook there in encouraging people to download Sling. One thing I like, there's a lot said online about growth hacking, I think. Do these little tweaks, these little A/B tests, these little experiments here and there, and get incremental improvements over time that'll lead up to a big improvement. And they're valid. Like, I've done a lot of this in the past and they do work. But it's not a substitute for just building a 10 times better product. And like, you can get incremental improvements by, you know, sign up emails that are personalized, or like leaderboards or gamification and all this other stuff. But ultimately, if you build an incredible product that solves the problem a user has, then that is the best growth hack, I guess. So, you know, when we ship to a wider audience, we'll do a bunch of user testing. We'll see if we're solving the problem as well. We'll see where we're not solving the problem as much. You mentioned requests, for example. If we get a bunch of user research that says everybody wants to do requests, then we'll build that into the product, sort of thing. But yeah, there's no substitute for just building a really, really, really good product.
That's so refreshing to hear in this, coming from outside of this industry where everything's gamified, everything's point system, everything's, you know, it's so tiring. But yeah, you can't beat just having a killer product, and that's your best marketing, I think. So you mentioned that, where are you guys currently, like, I mean, that in kind of, I suppose, location where people could actually use it? Is there expansion, like where will that initial phase start out?
Yeah, Yeah, so we're still in beta at the moment, and we're in 29 countries, predominantly around the EU. Our goal is to be in every country we're legally allowed in the world, so that I don't have to consider where you are in order to send you money, in the same way that when I send you a text message, I don't think about where you are. That is our end goal, and between now and then, that's what we'll be working towards. But at the moment, we're in the UK and a bunch of the EU countries. And when I say that we're in those countries, it means we have incredible on and off ramps in those countries. So the thing with crypto products, I guess, is theoretically you can build a crypto wallet and ship it in every country in the world in a sort of compliant fashion. And that's not a problem. The problem comes when you want to interact with fiat currency. That's when you need licensing. That's when you need partnerships. That's when you need all this other stuff that is actually the hard part about building an international payments product. So when I say we're in those countries, that's where you can sort of very easily add, and that's where you can very easily remove money. And that's the experience we want, right? Which is when you download Sling, there are no surprises. It's easy to add, it's easy to remove, it's easy to send. So we could ship in, Costa Rica as like a base crypto wallet, and you could send to someone who has a crypto wallet in Costa Rica, but they wouldn't be able to add and remove money. So I don't think we're fulfilling what our goal is as a company there. And therefore it's sort of like, as I spoke before about like focus, we're like removing our focus from what we truly believe makes a good product. That's what we mean when we say we're in a country. We mean that, you know, you can add money very, very easily, you can remove money very, very easily. And you can send money back and forth to those countries.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You mentioned kind of like how Wise demonstrate against PayPal. Is there any kind of like internal numbers that you guys are seeing with regards to, obviously we know it's gonna be cheaper faster, but like figures representing kind of how cheap it will be in comparison? Maybe you don't have to name any names or anything, but is there any kind of anecdotal evidence there?
Yeah, we're confident that we can be cheaper than all the existing competitors that we have. Whether that be over time or whether that be from day one, whether that be in every country or whether that be in some specific countries, will vary. So obviously we work with partnerships in different countries, and therefore our costs are different in different countries as well. But we're confident that, especially with scale, we can be substantially cheaper than all the international remittance companies. Yeah. There's also another side of it, which is we talk a lot about price. And I think price is important, especially, you know, when you're dealing with money, money matters when you're talking about money. But I think quite often what's overlooked is people will pay for a better user experience. So, for example, with a lot of products, you can like remove your money for free, but it takes 3 days. And if you want to remove your money instantaneously, they charge you 1%, for example. And a lot of people, we're friends with a lot of sort of founders of like Venmo and Cash App and stuff like that. So we have chats with them and say, how did things work for you? How the product stuff going on your side of things? And we hear that it's quite often that people will pay a little bit extra to have a better user experience or get their money faster, for example. So we do focus on price, and we do truly believe that international payments or payments to anybody should be incredibly cheap, or even free, you know, when sending from Sling to another Sling user. But I think what's often overlooked is just a better user experience will be better for everybody. And like, I think that's the better thing to market. One way to look at it is like, you can buy Roller Cola from your local spa shop or whatever it is, and it costs you 20 pence. And some people do, and that really matters for some people, but a lot of people still buy Coke, even though it's 4 times more expensive, because it's a better product. And by marketing ourselves, I guess, or by focusing more on the fact that we believe we're truly a better product, a better user experience, I think that just seems like a more positive way to try and sell Sling.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of people asking, like, is it private beta at the minute? Can I get a hands on it? can I get a code for the description or on here or?
Yeah, absolutely. So
figure something out.
Yeah, we are in beta at the moment. We've actually created a code Blockmates. So if you download the app and input the word Blockmates into the little screen that says we've got a waitlist, then you can sign up for Sling and have a go for all your users. The reason we're in beta, I guess, is a couple of things. Trust is degraded incredibly quickly with financial products, especially brand new financial products. And we want to make sure the app works 100% of the time, like 100% of the time. There shouldn't be any surprises. So we're working towards that. And we've got a really, really good group of beta testers that come in and give us feedbacks and stuff like that, which is amazing. And if anybody tries it out, please do reach out. We've got a Slack community, which you can join from the app or from our website. And people chat in there about what they'd like to see or where things haven't worked the way they'd expected to. So that's why we're sort of in this phase right now where we're trying to, you know, still create the best product.
All right. Well, yeah, there you have it. You can go and try it out. If you're just go and give it a go. I've got it. I was lucky enough to get. There we go.
Give the people what they want to see.
When you try the app, this is who you're trying the app for.
Help me provide for my fluffy son.
But yeah, go and give it a go. You're gonna be, I think you're gonna be blown away by even in a beta phase how good this thing is. I think you'll be seeing a lot more of these guys as time goes on. And just want to say thank you to Simon for jumping on. And if you guys are around the corner. I'll actually send you the link for the meetup with Yuzura about. And but yeah, thanks a lot for your time, and hope everyone enjoyed that one, and we'll catch you next time.
All right, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a like, subscribe, and turn the notification bell on for next time. See ya.